Hello, and welcome to the very third episode of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I am Adam.
And I said it that way because we are talking about the very first episode of Star Trek Discovery tonight. That is titled The Vulcan Hello. So. That is, and if you recall my little lesson on what it means to have writer's credits, there's the ampersand versus the and. So the teleplay of The Vulcan Hello was written by Brian Fuller and, not ampersand, Akiva Goldsman. So in other words, Brian Fuller started it, and then it was taken over and finished by, or rewritten essentially, by Akiva Goldsman. The story has an ampersand, so that means it was a collective effort of Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman. All right, so we have news, ratings, and info, and if you're used to me on The Walking Dead talk through, you know I have my little jingles. I've got them here too. So I'm going to call this a shipwide announcement. All right.
I love all those old sounds so much.
Yeah. And the best thing is those old sounds are still in use on Discovery. So that's one thing they got right. All right. Well, some things that we didn't get right last time out are in errata, but of course, for using some original series sound effects, we use
incorrect.
All right. I was referring last time to a ghost writer or shadow writer. What I was really meaning was the term script doctor, which is essentially a writer that comes in uncredited and, you know, provides some additional polish on a script at the end. And you may be interested in this one, Adam. One of the most sought out writers, script doctors, when she was, you know, still with us, was the late Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, I heard that, but very late in, actually after she passed, I find that out. I thought that was very interesting that, I mean, if you've ever seen her on Twitter or anything, she's kind of hard to follow at times, yet somehow she's able to really put a good polish on a script and get a character's meat into the scenes, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, she had, I noticed one, she had done the script doctoring for one of the Lethal Weapon movies and actually, you know, several different things like comedies, dramas, action movies, all sorts of stuff. So that's pretty interesting. So, yeah. And you had an errata.
Oh, I had a few.
Well, you had one in particular. So, something about the number of legs.
Oh, basic math, you mean? Yeah, well. So, apparently, when you have two four-legged animals and two-legged humans, yes, we both have both of our legs, that would make for 12 legs, not 10. So, yeah. Oops.
I thought that was funny. Can still use that for that kind of...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't need to remind you that you're incorrect, but...
Incorrect.
I didn't even correct you, even though I heard you say 10 legs. I'm like, 10 legs? Then I thought maybe your dog is missing a couple of legs or something. Anyway. All right.
No, just me missing a couple of brain cells.
All right. Well, let's go into the ratings for now. Here's another thing that I should say. Now, if you listen to me on The Walking Dead Talk Through, you know that I spend a lot of time going through ratings. It's kind of a thing that I picked up many years ago when one of my shows was in jeopardy of getting canceled, which is actually, it did get canceled. It was, I don't know if you ever watched it, Adam. It was The Event. Did you ever watch The Event?
I did not pick up on that one, actually. I was apparently one of the reasons your beloved show got canceled.
Exactly. Well, you know, it had a big cliffhanger that we never got to find out what happened. So anyway, on that, we're never going to have any ratings for Star Trek Discovery unless, like, I don't know, CBS says something about subscribers to All Access or something. But we do have ratings for the first episode. So it got, these ratings were adjusted later in the day, but because it was on at a weird time because of football, it got a 1.9 in the 18 to 49 demographic with 9.6 million. Now, that's not too bad, but I do know that that is quite a bit lower than what the Orville got. So I think it actually got more in the total number of viewers, but less in that coveted 18 to 49 demographic. So I wonder if some of that is because of the, I'll call it the all access factor. I don't know.
Well, how would the all access factor be a factor on network TV?
Because there are a lot of people that have at least said to me personally that they either aren't going to watch or they're going to wait and binge it later on, so they don't have to, you know, spend a lot of money on CBS All Access. There's, you know, a great deal of people for, you know, that are resenting the fact that CBS is putting this on yet another streaming service that people have to pay for. So I had people tell me just in the last day, same thing. They're like, I don't want to watch this show because I don't want to have to pay for CBS All Access. I'm so upset. So, you know, it's like, okay.
I can understand that to a degree. I did not watch it on television. I actually watched it on the All Access app. And I got to say, that's not exactly a great viewing experience.
Oh, no? That, we'll have to get into that more in a minute.
Okay. Let's go over those numbers a little bit. So the 18 to 49-year-old demographic was kind of missed. Why do you think it didn't hit home with the treasured demographic there?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. I think the Orville was released at 8 p.m. So it most likely got more viewers coming off of football than Star Trek did. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, after football, Star Trek had in front of it 60 Minutes, which, you know, does get a lot of viewers, but let's face it, it's an older demographic. So, so it probably didn't get as much of a bump.
Okay, I could see that.
So I think, anyway, that's part of what happened. So it's a good rating. I mean, TV by the Numbers said that it got decent ratings. So, you know, I mean, if you just compare it against the Orville just on raw numbers, because I think it got a 2.8 the first week. But it got it directly after football, whereas this did not. So,
yeah, that really didn't do the show any favors to delay the premiere, because they had to, they delay 60 Minutes all the time, but to run 60 Minutes in its entirety and then run 18 minutes late on the premiere, I was confused as well, because I I was actually out of town this weekend, but I was around a television when this was set to premiere. And I was very confused because there were 60 minutes on TV and I was looking at my watch going, this should be Star Trek. And apparently it launched, you know, just after I left the area. But for people tuning in expecting to see Star Trek and there's 60 minutes rolling along, they might have tuned out.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be unfortunate, but I think
it also doesn't show a lot of respect to a flagship show that's premiering. I mean, if the network doesn't even pay it the proper care to make sure that the launch happens on time, it's hard as an audience member to really give it that much value either.
All right. So let's get into our actual ratings for this episode. So I don't know if you've figured out a rating now. Adam, we didn't even get to discuss this before we started recording, but normally the podcasts on the Golden Spiral Media Network do a rating out of 10. Okay, so while you tabulate what your ratings are going to be. Do you know what you would give this episode out of 10?
I believe it's logical to give it a 7 Sarex out of 10.
7 Sarex out of 10.
Yeah. His shadow loomed pretty large over the episode, I felt. So we'll go with Sarex this week.
All right. And I will give it an 8. 8 scared Kelpians. All right.
That's one of my favorite new species.
Yes. Yes. All right. Can you want to give Nathan's rating?
Okay, so it appears that listener Nathan Smith says he would give this 7 number ones out of 10.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So it appears that the opinion so far is that we were entertained but not overwhelmed by the premiere.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Actually, I would say I was I liked it, and I'm certainly going to keep watching, even if I wasn't podcasting about it. But there's enough there that I didn't, you know. It's not a home run on my end. So I haven't figured out what to call this section of the podcast. I figure we're going to keep a similar kind of format to what we've been doing on The Walking Dead. We call it Awesome Sauce. I think probably by next episode, we'll have a better name for it, a more Trek name for it. But Ruthie, we'll play you anyway. Awesome sauce. All right. So in the awesome sauce section, as well as the weak sauce section, we try to cover some fast points about the episode that we thought were awesome, and then in the weak sauce, weak. So I will start since, Adam, you haven't had to do this before. So first thing I will say is, I think my favorite, character in this episode by far was Saru. And that was something I did not expect, but that guy's got quite a bit of character. There's a sense of humor in both the way that he plays it and in the dialogue. And I got a kick out of how Burnham kind of just shoot him away on the one thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's kind of interesting how he's obviously extremely risk averse, and you know, they kind of discount everything he says because, like, well, Kelpian, you know, they always want to think that that, you know, the sky's falling, essentially. So I definitely enjoyed his character. What about you? What's your first thing that you would say is awesome?
The thing that jumped out to me first was the overall presentation of the show. I have to say that the look of it, you can tell that the money has definitely not been held back on this show. The ship designs are super detailed. The makeup jobs, I mean, there were so many close-ups on the Klingons and on Saru, and you couldn't see any lines or anything like where the prosthetic was applied or anything. I mean, the visuals were just stunning.
Yeah.
It's almost to its detriment in trying to match up with anything that we've seen before on a Trek TV series, because this is far and away the best we've ever seen.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I'd even say that in a lot of places, it was better than like the last, you know, the Kelvin Universe movies and its look and feel. Like it looks like movie quality look to this. So
yeah, I wonder if the quality is going to stay at this level, or if they, you know, really rolled out the big guns for the premiere. Because they tend to do that a little bit. You know, they've got a larger budget just to make sure people are impressed with the first go around.
Yeah. All right. Well, my next awesome sauce was how, and I agree with the visual thing. I had that written down too. But the other thing I had down was how Burnham is called number one. So that is, of course, you know, reminds me of Riker and how Picard called Riker number one. And it even goes back to the cage and the Majel Barrett character that was just known as number one. So that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually forgot that in the cage, the number one moniker was in there as well. Yeah. And for a while there, I was actually thinking it was kind of overdone in this episode, but I forgot that in the cage that was also used. So that, I guess, you know, maintains with canon.
Yeah. All right. What's your next
one? That was a fun callback. As long as we're staying in the realm of what's classic and retained, I got to say the ship sounds were just excellent. I mean, especially when the beacon lit up and all the alarms started going off on the Shenzhou. I recognized everything from classic original series sounds to original series movie sounds to Next Generation. Like, they threw everything in there just to make sure there was something for everyone to be heard there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of like Next Generation sounds, or not, but particularly, you know, original series, like not things like, you know, the computer.
That would have been great.
It's like a teletype. But you know, other things, you know, you definitely heard things that you heard all over the place, like, you know, the hailing frequencies, which we'll hear in a minute. That was rather unexpected, I think, considering, you know, the difference in, you know, how things looked compared to, you know, original series. And we talked about that actually quite a bit the last couple of episodes, how, you know, if they delivered a series that looked exactly like, you know, the 1966 version, what would we think about it? It's kind of funny, you know, I've continued my rewatch of Enterprise, and there's that two-part Mirror Universe episode that I actually just watched. I just watched it yesterday before the premiere. And there in that Mirror Universe episode, they actually come across the Defiant, which the Tholians somehow put back in time. So they, you know, got a hold of the NCC 1764 Defiant, not the Defiant from Deep Space Nine. And, you know, anyway, so I just saw, you know, an episode from, you know, the last series where we saw the old look and feel. And it's like I say, I would not expect things just in 2017. I think if you're doing a whole series about that, like doing a, you know, a one or two episode thing about showing the original series, you know, like they did there, or like Deep Space Nine did with that Tribbles episode,
mm-hmm.
that you can see. But for other episodes, you know,
you
wouldn't want
to. You can go tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
You can go tongue in cheek for an episode, but you can't base a whole series around it.
Yeah. All right. You got something else, I see.
Yeah. The last one I wanted to point out was just the whole pacing of this story I thought was really good. I mean, the Klingons were portrayed as very alien for a change. I mean, the look is way different than what we know, and they spoke entirely in Klingon with subtitles. So it was very good at dehumanizing them and making them seem like creepy and mysterious. So they really took their time, it seemed, in rolling out the plot and emphasizing how little the Federation, or I guess particularly the Shenzhou crew, knew about not only their culture, but how to handle this encounter. And I thought that was that could have been completely steamrolled over, given that the Klingons in the original series weren't handled this way, and the Klingons in Enterprise weren't handled this way. So to put it where it was in the timeline and then build up this mystery, because the Federation realizes that they don't know what's going on with the Klingon Empire recently, because they have made a point of not having any contact. I thought that is a great premise to start with, especially since, you know, articles have said that this is going to be a plot thread through the entire first season. So there's no need to rush into it and have instant action. I really liked the fact that they held back on it and kept building and building instead of giving the instant payoff.
Yeah. All right. Well, it is now time for what we call on the Walking Dead talk through weak sauce. And for that, we go back to Twisted Sister.
You're worthless and weak.
All right.
So what's first up for your weak sauce there, Brian?
Well, it was visually stunning, but I have to admit, especially on the first watch, it was visually jarring. I may get over it, you know, over time, but I mean, just some of the things that I was having issues with. The Klingons, you know, and I had a feeling I might have an issue with the Klingons, but I kept looking at these Klingons and saying, that's not how Klingons look. I mean, like, even their noses, like, it's like they have this, like, double nostril. Did you notice that?
Yeah, like they can't hide the human nostrils in the makeup.
Yeah. That odd. And, you know, of course, the swept back ears and, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, that doesn't really bother me too much. The look of the I think they pronounced it the Shenzhou. I don't know if you heard that or not, but I think it was
a little inconsistent. It yeah. seemed to depend on which character was speaking.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, that ship looks, you know, so it looks like a 25th century bridge versus a mid 23rd century bridge. So, like, I did the math, and you know, the outward Shenzhou looks, you can see definitely a sort of DNA there between that and the NX-01, the original Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got a lot of the same looks and, you know, that kind of bumpiness, similar colors. But the inside, I mean, it looks like something you'd see 100 years after Next Generation. So, and yes, I know this. And yes, you said that, like, I guess what I'm saying, Adam, is I really wish that they would just say, we're doing a visual update, a visual reboot of the show, and not kind of try to pussyfoot around it. Because if they just said that, and, you know, we said, okay, we're keeping the story, but we're updating the look, and, you know, so some things are going to look different, and, you know, just be okay with it. You know, we're modernizing the show. But they didn't really say that consistently, you know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. I don't know. After I watched it, I think I watched it three times. So the second and the third viewing, it didn't bother me as much. And I know that over time, it's going to bother me less. But another thing that I have to say, too, is the holograms. Like, that we never saw in the original series. And for that matter, we never saw it in Next Generation either, I don't think. I don't think we actually saw holograms until, like, Deep Space Nine.
I think that was introduced with the Defiant because they didn't have a view screen. In fact, I remember a behind-the-scenes bit that said they basically invented that because they didn't have a view screen for the Defiant Bridge.
Yeah. So that part of it, and, you know, I'm not trying to be a nerd, not trying to really nitpick, but it was enough to, like, make me, like, just take me aback a little bit. I'll try. I don't think, like, over the long term, it'll bother me that much. But just, you know, for the first episode, and considering, you know, we kind of stopped watching and didn't watch the second episode yet, so that we could, you know, podcast about this first episode, which, you know, a lot of people out there have only seen this one episode because that's the only one that was available for free. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe by the second episode it won't bother me so much. I don't know. What about you?
I would have to say that probably the first thing I noticed, actually kind of piggybacking off of your statement about how visually jarring it was, not so much the visuals themselves, but the presentation. I found, especially towards the end of the episode, that the camera work, it got to be dizzying, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. So many scenes that really could have used a fixed camera position, they just did the constant dolly work, making laps around the two characters with their dialogue, especially towards the end with Michael Burnham and Lieutenant Saru. And they're just going around and around, and I'm just wishing the camera would stop. I was almost getting motion sickness trying to follow the scene. Like, and the same shot with the holographic admiral.
Yeah.
Same thing. They come in at a weird angle from over the table and spin the point of view as it's coming over the table. And for what? It's not a mysterious scene. It's not a creepy scene. So having a disorienting camera angle on it, just, it's kind of off-putting, where I have a hard time focusing on what's going on in the scene because I'm still trying to orient myself within the space.
Yeah.
And speaking of Kelvinverse lookalikes, the lens flares, they are in there, and I don't understand it, because in a lot of cases where I saw them, there was no motion to indicate why a light source would be passing through the camera's field of vision to create one.
Yeah, especially before, you know, what happened with the Klingons, like, dropping that, I don't know, light bomb, if you want to call it.
Yeah, the beacon.
Yeah. Before that, you know, it didn't seem to make much sense why they would have that kind of effect. But, yeah, I noticed it too. And, again, it was enough for – it was in the same, like, jarring kind of effect for me. So,
mm-hmm.
You've got something down. I'm going to let you say it because you just have it down in three words where I kind of expanded upon one particular example of this. So why don't you give your final weak sauce?
Oh, the bridge crew banter overall. I mean, this is kind of a problem with most Star Trek pilots where as the actors are still kind of, and the writers are still finding the characters and how to deliver it. There was just so much playful, joking, sarcastic back and forth. Like everyone had to get their little one-liner in there. It didn't make any sense. Right down, especially when they gave it to the captain. You know, are we always this sarcastic? Not always, but I like it. Like,
yeah.
You're a by-the-book, straight-faced captain. Why are you trying to crack wise?
Yeah, I agree. And to that end, you know, the example that really got me and, you know, I heard it, it made me chuckle, but then as he's continuing, you know, with the little joke, I'm thinking that doesn't really make a lot of sense. And that was, I'll call him Ensign Airline Pilot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, giving his little, you know, you're flying at 39,000 feet and, you know, we're going to be traveling over Buffalo, you know, that kind of crap. That is not something that a guy from, what was it, 2256, I believe was the
mm-hmm.
calendar date that Burnham gave. I don't think that he would understand a 20th or, you know, 21st century airline experience. It seemed like a joke that was for, you know, the 2017 viewer, but it seemed so out of place that it didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, I agree. Same with you. If they had just made it one line, it might have played off okay. But the fact that he had the whole speech down, that you wouldn't say that on a military vessel, since this seems to be much more rank and file than the relaxed nature of previous series. And you certainly wouldn't know that from hundreds of years in the past.
Yeah. Like, you know, unless we're not to believe that there's a holodeck in the 23rd century. That was weird.
Oh, yeah.
I just heard myself. So do you have any other weak things, the sauces of the weak variety?
Well, I see a note that you made here, and I was going to let it pass, but since it bared mentioning in your notes, I guess I'll piggyback off of it. The Klingon speech. I like making them speak in subtitles because it doesn't make any sense to have them speaking English on their own ship. But they did such a good job with the prosthetics. It sounds like they can't get past their own teeth.
It was mumbled. It was like they were speaking with marbles in their mouth. And, you know, it was annoying. I mean, this whole reinvention of the Klingons, you know, I'm trying to ignore it as much as I can. But the fact of the matter is, when we've seen, you know, leaders of, you know, Klingon houses and, you know, Chancellor Gowron and all, you know, various people like that, we hear them speak and they enunciate, and you've got this guy and he's like, you know, "I come in peace."
Yeah.
You know, it just is. I don't think that works very well. So the makeup, you know, it looks great what they've done, inconsistencies aside, but it's like, what's that character? Bane, similar kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bane and, you know, the Batman movie, you can hardly hear what the guy said. Similar thing.
Yeah. That was one of the things that really took me aback, about the Klingons was it seemed like they were yelling, but it wasn't loud enough to sound like yelling.
Yeah. All right.
I assume the speech would actually, it makes sense. I mean, if you've got that kind of mouthful of teeth, then you're going to sound a certain way. So while it may make scientific sense from a show-making perspective, you can go in and please clean up that dialogue in ADR and speak it normally.
Yeah. I have to agree. You know, we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll fix some of that up, you know, in post. Maybe not in this first half, but maybe they'll, you know, make some little corrections in the second half when it comes on in January or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that all you have for things of the week variety?
For the time being, I'm still reserving judgment on a lot of things simply because one episode isn't enough to really judge anything against. So maybe some other things that are irksome right now will just level out and become normal. Because overall, I think the look of the show and the Federation look in general is very, very austere, very sterile. There's no warmth there.
Yeah, yeah. Very dark, like very metallic, very, you know, gray, dark gray, you know, bluish gray. A lot of, you know, metallic looks and, yeah.
I mean, Star Trek Next Generation was too far in the soft direction and the streamlining of everything, but
yeah,
this doesn't look like anything that a human-led organization would design for their own occupation.
Yeah.
Like, there doesn't appear to be any source of comfort there whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, this, following a similar format that we have used for The Walking Dead talk through, we call it feedback first. So normally what we would do in this case, like if we had gotten awesome sauce and weak sauce or whatever we're going to call it next week or next episode, sorry, it's going to be earlier than next week, a few days away. We would have the listeners' responses first. So before we get into other things that we have to say about the episode, we're going to open hailing frequencies and talk to our listeners. All right. Well, first, we have a voicemail. We have our first voicemail. Adam, what do you think about that?
That is amazing. That is excellent.
And it is an excellent voicemail from friend of the network and also a podcaster of several podcasts. He does a podcast on Killjoys and The Expanse, so other sci-fi shows. And he just finished a one on Orphan Black. Mark DeCote from Solo Talk Media. Anyway, he left us a rather great voicemail, so let's get into that.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Adam. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. First off, darn that American football. It got delayed here in Canada as well because of that. And I'm extremely lucky because both episodes were airing back-to-back here in Canada. I ended up getting all of the first episode because it was delayed by about 20 minutes or so. So after my hour recording that I had set up finished with still about 20 minutes left, I was able to press play on the second episode and finish off episode one. Now, unfortunately, that meant that I was missing about 20 minutes of the second episode, but luckily, I had set my DVR to record that after Trek or whatever that show was going to be. It was going to air at 1 a.m. here in Canada. Well, when I went to play it, it ended up being, instead of after Trek, it was the second episode in its entirety. So I got both first and second episode. Now, I know this podcast is only talking about the first one, so here's some of the feedback from just that one episode. I have to say, I absolutely love the opening title sequence. I know in the last podcast you discussed the music and how it would transition from that newish type music to the old familiar music. Well, I think they did a really good job. And I love the displaying of the phasers and the communicators and the ship and showing the architectural kind of drawings of it. So very well done. I enjoyed that. I actually rewound it and watched it a second time just to appreciate the music and appreciate the visuals for it. Now, I have to say, going into this first episode, there were a lot of things that I kind of knew because of reading or listening to your podcast that led me to look at this episode a little bit differently than I would have going in blind. First of all, I didn't even bother trying to remember the name of the ship or the name of that captain because I kind of figured that they won't survive. We know that Michael ends up on the Discovery, and she's still the first officer on the Discovery, which leads me to believe that her ship doesn't survive whatever is going to happen. Now, going into this first episode knowing that, I didn't bother trying to learn any of the characters' names or anything like that because I don't know if any of them are going to be around. So why bother? Even Doug Jones' character, I loved his character. Quirky, a little bit fearful, fun. But I don't even know if Doug Jones is going to go beyond the first two episodes here. So that's one thing that kind of took me out of the episode was just not bothering to learn who all these people were. Because we know that Michael eventually ends up on the Discovery. Now, I don't know at this point, and I haven't read a whole lot about it, probably not as much as you guys did. I don't know if the Discovery is going to be a newly commissioned ship or if it is an older ship and she just somehow, for some reason, becomes the first officer on it. If that's the case and it's not a newly commissioned ship, then there's really very little chance we're going to see any of these characters from this first episode again besides Michael. So all that to say that I went into this episode not bothering to learn anybody. Now, there were a couple of things that I kind of turned my head at. One, they seem to be some sort of robot on the bridge manning one of the stations. Now, I'm not going to say android because we know that Data was the first android in Starfleet. So what was this robot character on the bridge? And I'm trying to remember, at one point the captain tells Michael in my ready room. And it seems to me that the ready room was something that came around in The Next Generation. I don't remember Kirk referring to a ready room. Now, I might be wrong, and I don't remember Archer on Enterprise referring to a ready room. I might be wrong. I don't watch these things as religiously as you guys do. Can you let me know if the ready room was a part of a Starfleet vessel in Enterprise or in the original series? I know there was a place that they met, but was it actually called the ready room? Now, one thing I didn't understand was when Michael went over to that, I don't know, whatever it was, the Klingon beacon or whatever it was called, was that warrior the only warrior there, or were there any other Klingons at that beacon? When we saw that Klingon religious council meeting, I presume that was on the cloaked ship. Was he stationed nearby, or was that ship stationed nearby, or was that in that beacon thing, or I don't understand that part. Because we know that the Klingons were preparing the dead, that warrior that Michael killed, they were preparing him for burial or addition to their ship's armor at the same time that they were still looking for Michael or that she was in recovery or something like that. So I found that a little bit confusing. Now, regarding the Klingons themselves, I'm going to save that for my episode 2 feedback. I do have some thoughts about that, but this feedback is only for episode 1. Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. I enjoyed the podcast so far and looking forward to actually hearing you discuss a real episode. So take care. This is Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
Now, how's that for a first voicemail? That is a high bar to have to exceed. So you set the bar pretty high, Mark.
I'm not even sure I want to continue with the show. I mean, how do we top that?
Well, Mark does a great podcast himself, so he knows how to bring up this stuff. Okay, so a whole bunch of stuff there. So
yeah.
First thing, there was a ready room on the NX-01. And I'm just watching Enterprise right now. So I can confirm that he did have a ready room, but it's a pretty small one, very cramped. Now, the Klingons, I believe that the Klingons only had that one guy on that beacon. The rest of them were on that sarcophagus ship, or that's at least what I've heard it being called. They didn't actually... they didn't actually mention that name by name in the episode, but at least when I've seen it referred to, like, on various things for the show, promotional stuff, they call it a sarcophagus ship. So all those people are on that ship, I think. What did you make of that? What did you make of that robot slash android? I had wondered about that too.
I'm really not sure, given that it appears to be an anatomically correct female. So I'm discounting it as maybe some sort of headpiece.
Hmm.
Or some sort of species that doesn't breathe air. So that's a combination of headpiece and breathing apparatus.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe. I'm sure we'll be seeing more of that, you know, character or whatever you want to call being, in episode two. I wanted to mention this to you, Adam. There's that character that looks like he is from the same race as the guy that's in the Cloud City.
Oh, right. Their communications officer has the headband,
yeah,
sort of array, like a Lobot from Empire Strikes Back.
That's right. Yeah. I couldn't remember his name, but I knew you'd know.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was deliberate. You got a lot of sci-fi nerds working on this show.
Yeah. So I don't know. What else did Mark bring up that we
Well, he put a little bit of a teaser in our heads there, saying that he has opinions on the Klingons, but he's going to withhold them until the second episode completes, so we can discuss that fully.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how much more we're going to learn there.
And another thing that might be a hint there is, you know, how he specifically didn't care to even try to figure out the names of the people on the Shenzhou.
Yeah, that was something of a spoiler, I think, in the credits, actually.
Yeah.
You notice that Michelle Yeoh is credited as a special guest star.
Yes, I did. And, you know, that was something that I kind of predicted, that she wasn't going to be on the show very long. And we really, you know, the characters that we see on the Shenzhou, with the exception of Saru, we don't really get to know them very well. They're just kind of, you know, background characters.
Yeah.
No personality really there.
Yeah, I think as we complain that there's not a lot of personality in them, that might be intentional, because it really won't matter soon anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Or maybe all that wisecracking gets them killed.
Yeah. Okay, so let's – you want to take
– sorry. The one other thing he mentioned, and I should have put this in my awesome sauce, was the opening titles. That really was a beautiful opening sequence.
You know, and I was talking to my Walking Dead co-host, Ruthie, who is watching this show as well. And I was telling her that I had seen a YouTube video that had the theme and had the, like, all the animation. And with it presented that way, and this, I think they released that like Friday or the day before, my reaction to it was, well, I hope that's not the theme, or, you know, the intro, because I don't like it. And the thing is, though, what wasn't there were the actual credits. Like, so there was, you know, not starring Sonequa Martin Green or anybody else. It was all the text part was not in that video. Mm-hmm. And I think there was something with adding the text to it, added more, I don't know, emotional significance to it. So after seeing that, I liked it a lot more. Actually, I thought it was really well done after seeing the text. Such a strange change of reaction after that, you know. It's, but
yeah. He mentioned he went back and watched it twice, and I have not had the opportunity to do that yet. I did get a second viewing of the episode to make sure I was ready for the show, but I skipped the intro sequence because, well, it's the intro sequence.
Right.
But I actually want to go back and watch it again just because it's so beautiful.
Yeah. I've seen it a few times now. All right. Mark actually had another bit of thing to say that he forgot to mention. This would pretty much be considered a weak sauce, but I just included it in the with his feedback. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, he was talking about, he said one thing that he forgot to mention was he calls BS on walking in the sand to create a Starfleet emblem visible from orbit. And I kind of set logic aside for this one too, actually. He says their hair and clothes were blowing around so much that with that storm approaching, any footsteps they took would have been blown away within seconds. And yeah, also how big of a symbol do you have to make that it's going to be visible from orbit? That's one hell of a walk.
I have to totally agree with you, Mark, on that point. You are 100% correct that considering the amount of wind that was going on, those footsteps would have been long gone. You know, it's not like they, I don't know, had special semi-cement footprints.
Yeah, they tried to make the sand look a little brittle, but not that brittle.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we got our next bit of listener feedback here from Malika Tazi. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Brian, what did Malika have to say?
Malika said, and she is also a listener of the Walking Dead podcast, as is Mark. But she said, and very, very short and to the point, speaking of the Klingons, all my stepson said so far is, those Klingons don't look right.
There's really not much else to say there because, as far as we know, he's right.
Amen.
Now, you know, producers have gone on record, show producers rather, not the actual role of producer, but they've gone on record as saying that will be addressed and they do adhere to canon somehow. So I am curious to see how this look of Klingon ties into the traditional look of Klingon.
Me too. All right. The last one we got in feedback was from Stefan. And I believe he is, I'm not sure what country he's from, but I believe he's from Sweden or Norway or something. Anyway, you want to read that one?
As long as I don't have to try the last name.
Nope.
All right. Sorry, I don't do well with my umlauts. he says, I liked it. Sure, Klingons don't look like we are used to. They have a more ancient look to them, kind of samurai outfits with gold details. So the Vulcan hello is to shoot first against the Klingons because Vulcan learned the hard way that Klingons do attack first. Michael, who's second in command, tries to convince the commander to shoot first to such a degree that she ended up being relieved of command. I miss the Star Trek sound walls, the small sounds in the background that identify this as a Star Trek world. Aside of that, it all looked fantastic, and they really put a lot of work into every scene. This is the pilot, and I'm very forgiving with some characters' overplay in the first episode to establish for the audience what kind of character they are. That prey race sense to feel danger is a bit overplayed, but like I said, I get it. I think they have to take it that way to establish his character. The silence on the bridge makes me think of Battlestar Galactica when older-style Galactica encountered Pegasus in that attack sequence and they start to call out the commands. It's in a soft-spoken, controlled environment, not that panic-in-the-bridge kind of feel. There's a lot to chew on there, Brian. What do you think about all that?
Well, okay, so we talked about the Klingons and how they look, so I think we'll skip that part of it. I don't really have too much to say about the outfits beyond what I've already said. But the Vulcan hello, I thought, was interesting and rather surprising. Not so much the hello itself, but one of the things, and I didn't put it in my weak sauce because I started thinking I'm going to put everything in my weak sauce. But, okay, why did Burnham have to contact Sarek about something that I would think would be something she could look up in the historical database?
Maybe this is a case of one of those points that Vulcans withheld from humans.
Yeah, but that was 100 years ago. You know, they're still holding them back from, you know, I would have to think that they would have let the Federation know that. I don't know. It seemed a strange thing, rather convenient thing for her to, you know, contact Sarek. You know, it was an excuse, if anything.
Yeah, boy, he was really waiting for that phone call too, wasn't he?
He was right there.
Yeah. Hey, I've got to make a phone call, and then 3 seconds later, boom. Hey, how you doing? Okay, let's talk Klingons.
Yep.
Like maybe he was eating dinner or in the shower. I don't know. What time is it on Vulcan? Maybe he's asleep.
Yeah, Vulcan standard time.
VST.
Yeah. The whole thing, she really went to an extreme, and I have to think that this course of action, I think I mentioned last episode that, you know, when we see her in the second trailer, she's not wearing gold anymore. She's wearing silver. So I have to think that she gets a demotion for this. You know, maybe she got court-martialed. Maybe she, you know, just like is run out of Starfleet. Who knows? But I have to think that she's getting a demotion. Like she probably went, you know, from a, you know, 3-pip commander to, you know, down to a lieutenant or something, maybe even lower.
It could be. I'd really like to see that, actually. The only time we've seen any sort of movement in rank in Star Trek has been either upward through, yet again, achieving something that no one thought was possible, or of almost a voluntary demotion in the case of Kirk in the movies.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see a Starfleet officer that actually screws up and pays a significant career penalty for it.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So anyways, Stefan, I don't know if you have anything else to say, but I'll just summarize by saying great feedback. Do you have anything else to say about Stefan's feedback?
I like the measured approach that he's giving to his review so far. Like you said multiple times, it is just the pilot, and I think some of the bumps in the road will be smoothed out as the episodes progress, because it did seem like they were really, really overplaying some of the character aspects, so you knew that the captain was a no-nonsense captain, and Michael Burnham was haunted by her past, and Saru was definitely afraid. And now that that's established, hopefully they can pull it back a little bit and level out the characters.
Yeah, I agree. This episode seemed very much like a half episode, you know, like Star Trek, as you know, with the exception of the original series and the animated series, everything since then has been a 2-hour episode, and although this was a 1-hour episode, it really did feel like the first half of a 2-hour episode.
Yeah, I thought the streaming app had actually mistakenly jumped ahead or something, because it went to commercial break with all the Klingon ships warping in and then came back to the end credits.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I must have jumped ahead a sequence or something.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to say about Stefan's feedback before we get into our own thoughts that haven't been discussed yet?
No, I think that's pretty much it. He's got some good takes here. And moreover, what I love most about this feedback is that now I'm going to be looking for these things. You know, the sound effects and all these sort of character beats and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff for the first show especially.
All right. Well, a couple additional things that I noticed. Why is it that they seem to have no clue about a Klingon, for that matter, any kind of ship with a cloaking device? Like they kept saying, you know, there's no warp signature. They seem to be completely clueless about a cloaking ship with a cloaking device when we know that Starfleet has seen ships with cloaking devices in the past. The Suliban had cloaking devices, and that was, you know, part of Enterprise. So, you know, that goes back 100 years before. So that was, again, you know, a little suspect for me. But one thing I did like that, and I mentioned this episode last time, and I went back and looked it up. It's was season 2 of Deep Space Nine, episode 19, titled Blood Oath. And that was, of course, the one with Kang, Kor, and Koloth going after the albino. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah. So we see an albino Klingon. So this is not that. That's one thing where it is consistent in canon because we have seen an albino Klingon before. So I thought that was cool. That was one thing that I thought.
And their attitude. Yeah. And their attitude towards the albino. You know, they made reference that, you know, some people only see the color of your skin.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess they don't like albinos in Klingon world.
Yeah. Do you have anything?
Well, I was kind of surprised here. I was going to point out, that the Vulcan neck pinch should only be done by Vulcans, but, you fact checked me on this one and I did not realize that, very late in Enterprise's run, in the season 4, episode 9, titled Kirshara, Archer does a Vulcan neck pinch,
and
I'll say that it's consistent in canon, but I still don't like it.
He's not the first human to use a neck pinch. The first human that we see in Star Trek that uses a Vulcan nerve pinch is, believe it or not, well, I don't know if he's the first, okay, but one of the first.
Chronologically?
Yeah. One of the first that we see, you know, in canon is Picard. He used the Vulcan nerve pinch on someone in the Starship Mine episode from season 6 of Next Gen. He took out
he took out
a character. In fact, you know, there've been other non-Vulcans that have used a Vulcan, you know, neck pinch or nerve pinch. Odo used it. And Seven of Nine actually used it. So it's something rare, you know, but we have seen non-Vulcans use it before.
See, this seems like something we'll have to research for the next episode to clarify, because I just did a quick search while you were talking about that, and apparently opinion is divided on whether Picard was using a Vulcan neck pinch or not.
Okay. Well, I saw that mentioned on Memory Alpha, so that's...
Well, sci-fi.stackexchange.com begs to differ, so we've got some research to do before the next episode.
All right. Do you got anything else, Adam?
No, I think we've covered this half of the episode pretty well, and now we've got to buckle down and get the second half viewed and recorded.
Yeah. Yeah, we're keeping it, you know, kind of short this time around. So if you want to leave us feedback And you can go to a few different ways to do that. One is going to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there you can use the form to submit text and or audio. And there's also on that page a SpeakPipe widget. You can use that as well. There's also a phone number, 304-837-2278. Make sure that you mention that you're leaving the feedback for the Star Trek Discovery podcast. We also are using, we got some feedback through our email. That is at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. And a lot of the feedback that we got today was through our new Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. So the deadline for next time to submit the feedback, we are going to record the episode for the our episode for episode 2, which is going to be our episode 4. Yeah, confusing. Anyway, we will cover Battle at the Binary Stars and record that on Thursday. So if you can get your feedback to us by 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central on Thursday, you will make the episode. So our Twitter is at Star Trek GSM as well. And we don't have any We don't have any iTunes reviews yet, but you could help us out by, first of all, subscribing to us. That helps bring us up in the rankings. And we're actually doing pretty well in the rankings right now. When you search for Star Trek Discovery in Apple Podcasts or iTunes, that crappy program, we are coming up pretty high in the results right now. So thank you for everyone who subscribed. And like I say, subscribe. And if you could leave us a rating or review, especially, that would be helpful. If you're going to, you know, obviously we'd love it if it would be a 5-star. And if it's not, if you're going to be, like you said the other time, keyboard warrior, you know, just be constructive about it. You don't care for us too much, at least tell us why. So
I should mention, by the way, I can't read Klingon, so please make sure you put on your universal translator and get that to us in English.
The next episode is season 1, episode 2, as I called it before. It's called Battle at the Binary Stars. I'm not going to read a description because the description should be obvious that it's a continuation of this story. So anyway, got anything else?
There's a battle.
Yeah, there's a battle. Yes. And it's probably in the same star system. So.
I did. Okay. I will give a quick preview, semi-spoilerish. This is where Captain Lorca shows up. So.
Ah, okay. Good.
We get to get at least one more ship involved, I think.
Good. All right. So if you want to listen to us, I should say, on other podcasts, I do the Walking Dead talk through. You can get to us there at goldenspiralmedia.com or walkingdeadtalkthrough.com. And Adam, why don't you tell the listeners about your other podcast?
Yeah, I have a Star Wars podcast called The Nerf Herder Council. We are available at nhcpodcast.com. That's the easiest way to access us. Can also be found on all the usual podcasting platforms right along this and all the other fine Golden Spiral Media podcasts.
All right, great. So, with that, we will say goodnight. And see you in a couple of days.
Are you a fan of the TV show The Blacklist? then you should listen to the Blacklist Exposed podcast. But don't take my word for it.
Hello, Garys. This is Susan Blumert.
Hey, this is Amir.
Hi, it's Megan Boone.
This is Hisham Taufik.
Hey, this is John Bokenkamp. Welcome to the Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed.
Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Hear these great interviews and more by downloading the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS or Android, and get all the case profiles at theblacklistexposed.com.